Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet. I'm Reuben Stern. In the spring of 2010, for the first time ever, a woman won an Academy Award for Best Director. Her film also won the award for Best Picture, and the following year, another film directed by a woman was also nominated for Best Picture. This kind of high-profile success would make you think that women had finally carved out a significant place in Hollywood, but the numbers tell a different story. Of the 250 top-grossing films last year, women accounted for only 5% of the directors. That number comes from a recent report from the Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film. For the top behind-the-scenes jobs overall, the numbers have held steady. About one in five are women, but the data show a big decrease in the already low number of female directors. With the Citizen Jane Film Festival taking place in Columbia this weekend, we take this opportunity to ask, what's going on in Hollywood? Could it actually be getting harder for women to make inroads in the upper ranks of the film industry? And why has it been so difficult all along? Our panelists today are going to give us an insider look into the world behind the camera. First, Paula Elias is co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival. Each year, the festival features a lineup of films made by women. Welcome back to our program, Paula Elias.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you back in our studio. On the phone, we have with us today Brenda Chapman. Brenda was the first American woman to direct a major animated film from a major studio. More recently, she was the writer and director of the Pixar film Brave. Welcome to our program, Brenda Chapman.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us today by phone. We hope that our audience will join our conversation as well. For those of you in our audience, do you think Hollywood's gender gap affects the kind of movies that we get to see? We'd love to hear your opinions on that. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And let's start off with this. Brenda, tell us about your experience and what it was like for you getting up to that sort of top level in the Hollywood film industry.
Well, you know, I went in through the back door and through animation. We're sort of the bastard child of the industry, so we don't get noticed as much. But I went to CalArts, and I was I went there for 3 years, and we all did our little student films. And I was hired as a Disney story trainee. Initially, they were thinking about an internship, but I wouldn't get paid for that, so I said, please let me be a trainee. But basically, it was sort of a reverse sexism, because they hired me because I was a woman, because they were getting flack for not having any women in their story department at Disney back in 1987. So I was the right price and at the right time and the right sex. So I got in, but I had to work all the harder to prove that I deserve the position, and not only to them but to myself, because that's a hard way to go in. I wasn't assuming that. The gentleman behind the desk told me that exactly. You're the right price. So it was sort of like that a lot of my career, just having to work just that much harder and stay that much later than I normally would have if I'd just been hired on my own merits. But I had a lot of great support from my mentors and from my fellow story artists, and I think I proved early on that I could do it. So I just kind of worked my way up through animation, and mm-hmm. It's such a tiny industry, at least it was when I started, that you get a good reputation going. It's hard to break that down unless you really mess up.
Right. I want to jump right in. We have somebody in our chat room who had a question right off the bat. You know, in developing a story, do you find that women and men communicate differently at that stage? For example, you know, how they would handle conflict type situations or other things like that. Brenda, I want to hear from you first, and then we'll give Paula a chance to weigh in from what she's seen of the films as well.
They're both. I mean, I think it's personality, but I find the men tend to talk over each other and have sort of this shouting match that happened, and you know, I'd be sort of having a hard time because I just didn't want to get into that whole thing. My mom taught me not to interrupt when someone was talking, so it was hard. But for the most part, you know, they're very respectful once they do quiet down and are able to hear what you have to say, but it's just getting the word in edgewise sometimes it's difficult.
Mm-hmm. Paula, I wonder from your vantage point as someone who's seen a lot of films, you know, together that women make, I mean, is there a manifestation there in terms of the way conflict gets handled in films?
You know, maybe. I mean, I don't know if I can give an overarching view on that simply because the films are all so different and it is very very much a factor of who you are as a filmmaker. But speaking to what Brenda said, I mean, I'm a filmmaker as well, and one of the projects that I worked on was with two other men, and that's exactly how it played out, is they would, you know, go at it, you know, and just, you know, shut up, no, this is what I think. And, you know, they'd really, like, manhandle each other, and I'd be sitting there going, okay, let's all talk about this. You know, and so I think that naturally women tend, and this is definitely a stereotype, but it also tends to be true in many ways, women tend to collaborate first. And men often will tend to, you know, try to put their idea forward very forcefully first. And I think we both, you know, come to the same conclusion, but I think it's a different route in a lot of cases.
Interesting. For those of you in our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the challenges that women face in getting to the top of the film industry. Joining me in the studio are Paula Elias, co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival, and Brenda Chapman, who wrote and served as a director on the animated film Brave. For those of you in our audience, how do you think the film industry could create more opportunities for women to advance? If you have ideas about that or anything else, give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And we'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can be part of our conversation at that time and watch our video stream by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. Brenda, I want to hear a little bit more about your experience in those kinds of situations. As you got higher up and closer to the helm of a film, did those kinds of issues play out more or less?
You mean the talking over and...
Yeah, just the sort of that difference in behaviors between the way that men might approach a situation and the way that women might. Did you notice that more or less as you got higher and higher up the chain?
No, it never really changed. It was a constant. You know, the one time that it did change was when I was working with Jeffrey Katzenberg at DreamWorks, and I became one of the directors on Prince of Egypt. He was really great about, you know, when that started happening and everyone was talking over each other and he'd see that I wanted to say something, he'd tell everybody to be quiet so I could say it.
Yay, Jeffrey.
It was kind of nice but kind of embarrassing at the same time. But, you know, people would listen. And the only other time that worked is when I had laryngitis and I was whispering. For some reason, everyone was very aware that I couldn't talk. So then they were listening for that little hiss of mine and would stop. But all the other times, I guess they thought if I wanted to talk, I should shout. So.
Wow. One of the audience members in our online chat room is wondering, can you talk a little bit more about what it was like to work with John Lasseter and Jeffrey Katzenberg? I mean, not a lot of people have had that opportunity, right?
No, they they haven't. And they both have their pros and cons, and I found that Pixar gave me the opportunity to create a film of my own creation, inspired by my relationship with my daughter and all of that. So I got to put a lot of my heart into that. And at DreamWorks, you know, they have a lot of ideas that they want to get made and would prefer that the director use one of their properties, but they're opening up too as well. So, but for the two of them, they're just two very different individuals, and you just have to adapt to who you're working with. Yeah. Jeffrey's a very energetic little straight shooter, very energetic, and John is a bit more laid back and goes beats around the bush a little bit more with his what he's trying to tell you, but gets it across eventually.
Right. How did it get to a point that you were able to tell a story that you wanted to tell? I mean, it's rare for a studio to place that much trust in anyone, let alone a woman in a place where mostly men are in charge, right?
Right. Well, initially, they really wanted to do something out of the box by the time I got to Pixar. They were also getting flack about not having a female protagonist and that kind of thing. So initially, when I was telling John about the kind of story I wanted to tell, he seemed very, very excited about it. So, and most of their films are done by the director, you know, that they are created by the filmmakers as opposed to an already existing project that they are just given at Pixar. So it's a little more like a little more creative freedom initially there.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of that, I mean, kind of a, what you're saying is they were they looking specifically for a woman with a female protagonist story to tell, or were there other things that helped you get to that place where you got to helm this picture?
Yeah, I think they were. And, you know, I'm one of the few in the industry that, you know, that is in that kind of position. So their list of choices, you know, are pretty slim. So, you know, I was a good friend of Joe Ranft. I'd worked with him for years at Disney. And he was their sort of head story guru. He's an amazing person. He was, he's a late Joe Ranft, unfortunately, was killed in a car accident a few years ago. But he brought me in and said, you know, I was the one that he thought could do this. So that's sort of how it worked for me. It was knowing someone, but knowing someone on a professional level that where we were familiar with each other's work.
Right. Paula, from your perspective, I mean, is that a similar scenario for a lot of female directors, that there are not so many of them, and if one is called for, then the studios go find one? Or how does it
I think
work?
I think that's true. And I think, like, even from the festival standpoint, we're always looking for, like, even when we first started, we were always looking for fiction films. There's a lot of documentaries and a lot of shorts to choose from, but not as many fiction films. And that's been changing, and I've really been happy to see that. We've got a great roster of fiction films in the festival this year. And so it's just it's a harder bar to get the money to make a fiction film, and then to be able to get it distributed. It's just more difficult. So I think that that's true. But what I loved about what Brenda said was that they were getting flack, and they reacted. I mean, I really like that, because then that gives us hope that if we can speak up and say, this is not okay, that change will happen. Back to your question of how do we fix this?
No, it's a good question. And I wonder about that. It seems interesting that if there's enough flack, then somebody who's in charge of a studio will go find a female character or a female director who has that. Is that an accurate portrayal of what goes on in Hollywood, Brenda?
Pretty much, I think. Yes, I don't have much to add to that,
And why do you suppose that is? I mean, what's going on out there in Hollywood that causes that to be the landscape, when in so many other industries that's no longer the case?
And why is it getting worse?
and is it getting worse? I mean, that's a whole separate thing to talk about. But in terms of the landscape of Hollywood and why it remains as male-dominated as what you're describing, I'm really curious your perspective on that.
Well, in my opinion, it's mainly because most of the studio executives are male, and they're usually anywhere from 30 to 50 years old, and they love the movies they grew up with, or they just are thinking in terms of the stuff they would like to see. And that's, you know, they grew up on Star Wars and all these action movies and you know, video games and all of that. So they've got this certain type of thing, but there aren't very many women in those positions that are making those decisions to bring a different perspective to it. So, and they also run by the, I think, incredible misconception that women will go see men's films, but men won't go see women's films, or boys won't go see girls' films, but girls will go see boys' films. And, you know, I just find that kind of ridiculous. If they actually went a little bit back, just, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, I mean, when I was a little girl, I'm aging myself now, all the boys in my class went to see Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and all that. They were just excited because it was an animated film coming out, and they loved the stories just as much as the girls did. But now the marketing and the way things are played, it's sort of pitted male and female against each other on that. And I think it's a learned thing that can be unlearned, and that way men can enjoy as much as the women. I mean, why is it the women who are so open-minded, you know?
Yeah.
About these things.
Well, I mean, another question, too, is, couldn't a woman direct a similar kind of movie to what Hollywood's making? I mean, Kathryn Bigelow, who was the first Academy Award winner for Best Director, directed The Hurt Locker, which is not exactly a touchy-feely, girly movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
Right. There's a huge breadth of films being made by women that you would never know it was made by a woman. I don't think you can just say, oh, a woman directed that because of the – certainly not because of the content, and not even really so much by the directing style, though, you know, being a student of things like that, I fancy that maybe I can tell a little bit. but who knows, really? I mean, I think it really is a very individual thing, and I don't think that there's – I think Brenda brings up a really good point. I don't think that it's true that boys don't want to see other kinds of films. I mean, I think there's a lot of jokes are made about, oh, he went and saw Twilight, you know, and in particular the first, you know, the one that Catherine Hardwick did. But I think it was a story that people wanted to see, and the theaters were filled with people of all genders. So
I mean, is Hollywood making movies more targeted toward men versus women than they used to, or is that always been the way it is, or is it changing in terms of the actual niche marketing of the film itself?
I mean, I think Bridesmaids is a great example of a film that came out and everybody held their breath trying to see if a film, a comedy, really with all women as the stars was going to, you know, and written, part co-written by a woman, if that was going to make it. And when it did, you know, it made people go, oh, maybe we need to rethink the way that we look at things. But I don't know that it's, I don't know, Brenda, you might be able to speak to this better than me, but do you think it's changed things markedly?
I haven't. There are more female films this year, I think, female-driven films. But I don't. I don't know if it will last. I hope it does. But I feel like, you know, to answer the earlier question though, was that I feel like there was a much more broad choice of films back in the older days of Hollywood. You know, there were spy movies and war movies and romance movies and romantic comedies and movies that were dramas but had a female protagonist. It just seemed like there was much more of a across the board, you know, choice than there is now. I mean, sometimes all it is you know, superheroes and action films, and you know, hard to find the good dramas or the just the choice.
Yeah, certainly a cyclical nature to that. I mean, the summer it's all blockbusters,
right.
And then that last month of the year before the Academy Awards deadline, like all the serious
dramas,
stuff
right.
comes out, right?
Right.
Okay, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the challenges women face in getting to the top of the film industry. Joining me in the studio are Paula Elias, co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival, which will be taking place this weekend in Columbia, and also Brenda Chapman, who wrote and served as a director on the animated film Brave. For those of you in our audience, would you be more or less likely to see a film if you knew it was directed by a woman? Why? Share your ideas, and they may be controversial, but that's okay. We'll discuss it in a good way here. 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And I want to keep going down this path of these films and the way that they're getting made. Is it likely that Hollywood would embrace more of those kinds of films again, or is this what is... Are we locked into this place where we have action movies and we have the Oscar contenders and the other stuff is, you know, less important, frankly, to the people who make these decisions? And I wonder, Paula, from your perspective first, what do you think of that question?
I mean, I think it all comes down to money. I think it's, you know, if you can reliably fill the theaters or reliably sell the DVDs, then you'll get a shot. and you may not get, you know, it's kind of like a prize fighter being in the film industry. It's, you know, you're only as good as your last prize fight, you know, and how well you did. So, but I think, I mean, I'm hopeful that things are changing. It's a little depressing when you look at the statistics and you look at the access that women have to the resource and to the opportunities. And I think Brenda spelled out really well why that is. But I do see it changing. I mean, just in the films that we had to choose from this year. I mean, there are so many films that we couldn't program but would have because of the caliber of the film. So there are amazing films being made by women. They're just not getting seen in the same way that the ones that are made by men.
And where are they coming from? I mean, where are these independent filmmakers who are doing art school projects or film school projects, or are they, you know, funded in a way that other movies get funded? How is it? What's responsible for the birth of these films?
I think they're getting funded in a lot of different ways. I think women tend to be really resourceful, and that's a good thing. but I think they are being funded in a lot of different ways. New Zealand, we've got a U.S. premiere of a film called Existence that is an awesome fiction film. It's an apocalyptic kind of a sci-fi thing. And it was directed by a woman who is a full-time physician. Partly funded by herself as well as by the New Zealand government, and they're really taking film more seriously in that country. So, you know, I think it's a lot of different ways. And like I said, I think women tend to be very resourceful. Independent filmmakers tend to be really resourceful, and most of it is happening in the independent film world.
Mm-hmm. Brenda, your thoughts on that?
I think there are a lot of great female filmmakers out there who are just, you know, just toeing the line by themselves. I mean, I had a young woman on Brave who was a story artist. She loves animation, but when she saw the struggles, you know, she just realized maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I need to get out there and make my own movies instead of working for a big studio. And she, in her spare time on weekends and everything, was out there making these little short films. She'd use Kickstarter. She'd, you know, use resources wherever she could get it. She had tons of volunteers, but she keeps teaching herself, you know, and I'm amazed that her name's Emma Coates, and I think she's very much someone to look out for. She's just in her early 20s and just has the passion for it. So they're out there, and they're making them, but it's just hard to get any, you know, press on it, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would need to happen to get more women into the sort of mainstream in terms of film goes? I mean, a festival like Citizen Jane is actively trying to find these films, but then what happens? What needs to happen in order for those films to find a larger audience?
I don't know that there is one answer to that question, Ruben. I think what Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady are doing with Detropia is something to really watch.
And what is that for those unfamiliar?
Detropia is a film that premiered at Sundance, and it's about the fall of Detroit. They're self-distributing. They had several really good distribution offers, and they chose to self-distribute. And I think part of that is so they can have control, because a lot of times what happens is you get your big distribution deal, and then they sit on the film and never, you know, it never really gets played, and they really wanted this film to be seen. So I think people are refashioning the way that we do things, and certainly with the internet, it's a whole new ballgame where that's concerned. So I really do think that things are changing. But it's. I don't think anybody knows how it's going to change and what's really going to happen. I think things like Citizen Jane Film Festival are crucial. One of the things Brenda talked about that just breaks my heart, when you talk about that young filmmaker and how, you know, she's not really sure where her place is. I love it that she's out just doing her thing, because that's really what it takes. But that's one of the reasons why with the festival it's really different than any other festival, in that we really design it like a retreat for the filmmakers, because we know that, you know, they're out there pushing it every single day. It really does get exhausting, and it's the reason that people quit. And so we designed the weekend to be a place to network and relax, and there's no competition, and it's really a retreat. It's a time to get away, because it's not an easy world, and you really do have to just want to do it with every fiber of your being.
Right. Brenda, are there other things that you know about that are out there to help encourage or support women filmmakers?
Gina Davis has been pretty invaluable these days. Paula, I don't know if you've had any contact with her, but she's got an organization, the Gina Davis Institute, that is basically pulling together statistics on, you know, how many female directors there are, but mostly about the number of female protagonists, female characters with names, just anything that children can look to or young people can look to as a role model on the female side of things, and how sadly very small that number is. And I think that's another thing that studios are looking at now because of her is trying to get more female role models within the films themselves, but that also I think entails sometimes a different perspective from a female director or writer. So she's making slow inroads, and she's like the little train, the little engine that could. She just keeps going. So I have a lot of faith in Gina, and she's really strong. I'm hoping she can sort of shake some cages very diplomatically as she does.
Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, are there other things that could make inroads in addition to somebody as high profile as Gina Davis?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, sorry, Brenda, that's for you.
Yes, I think it's just a matter of women who are in the industry mentoring other women who are trying to make it into the industry. I mean, we get the bad rap of being really competitive and women don't support each other, but I haven't really experienced that. You know, what few of us are in the industry have tried really hard to help the younger ones keep going. And I feel like instead of hiding our mistakes and our failures, that we need to put them out there to show them, okay, avoid this pitfall, avoid that pitfall. How would you have done that differently? You know, it's a learning experience, and hopefully by the time they get up a little further, they'll be more experienced and knowledgeable than we were when we started so many years ago.
Okay. We have a few minutes here, and I want to put through a caller that we have on the line. Khaki is on the line. Are you with us?
Yes.
Great. Thanks for calling in and joining our program today.
Yeah, this is Paula and Brenda. Thanks. It's been a lot of great information already. The question I have, Brenda, you were there when DreamWorks was founded. And,
yes, I was.
Right, and you've had a chance to work at Pixar. And then Paula, you're one of the co-directors of the Citizen Jane Festival. The question is, why aren't more women starting their own studios? I feel like women kind of might start a conference or a film festival, but why aren't women building their own Pixar, their own DreamWorks, their own Walt Disney?
It's a good question. Paula, we'll start with you on that.
I think they are. I mean, it's happening. I think that it's, again, back down to resource. It's not, you can build it and then will they come? I think it becomes the question, you know, being able to have the distribution and being able to get the films the kind of spotlight that they need. I think it's difficult. But, yeah, people are doing it.
Brenda, your thoughts on that?
It's also, for animation especially, it's an incredibly expensive endeavor, you know, because you have a lot of overhead. You know, unless you're sending everything overseas, it's really hard to start up a fresh new animation studio. But, you know, witnessing how hard it was to get DreamWorks started, you know, it's a little intimidating. But it's a lot to do with finances and resources. So it's just very difficult. But at the same time, I am working with Kathleen Kennedy at Lucasfilm right now, and George has sort of handed the reins of his studio over to her. So this has been a real pleasure for me to work with someone who I have respected for so many years, and she's running a studio.
Right.
Can you talk about the project that you're working on, or is that one of those I could tell you but I'd have to kill you type questions?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Okay. I'm going to have to jump in for a second here and let everyone know this
thank
is...
You guys.
Thank you for
thank
calling
you.
In. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the challenges that women face in getting to the top of the film industry. Joining me in the studio are Paula Elias, co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival, and Brenda Chapman is on the phone with us. She wrote and served as a director on the animated film Brave. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. In the meantime, if you have questions or comments for after the break, give us a call, 573-882-8925. Stick around. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the challenges that women face in getting to the top of the film industry. Joining me in the studio are Paula Elias, co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival, which will take place in Columbia this weekend, and Brenda Chapman is on the phone with us. She wrote and served as a director on the animated film Brave. For those of you in our audience, what do you think might be different about the films we get if more of them were directed by women? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Brenda, I want to jump in with something that's a little bit off of what we've been talking about, but I wanted to get a chance to talk about this while we're on the phone. Your experience in the Hollywood milieu, for lack of a better word, included sort of getting to a very high place and then not being in that place. You were a director on the film, and then you were not the director on a film that was your film, frankly, right? You wrote it. It was your idea.
Uh-huh.
And then after that happened, you know, you wrote a letter about it. You didn't sort of slink off into hiding. You, as Paula said during the break, you went up there and sort of said, here's what happened, and told your story. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about what you said, for one thing, and why you decided to go out in a public way and talk about your experience.
Well, I felt like there was a little of rewriting history going on. I preferred to just let it go and you know, I knew I was still going to retain my credit because it is my film and is my story, you know, inspired by very personal aspects of my life. And, you know, when there were a few things that were being said and written in other interviews, I decided that I needed to say something. But for the most part, I just wanted to say, you know, it was disappointing because they had to replace me with a man, not that a man couldn't do it, and he did, and he did a fine job, but that it was a story that was so female-driven. It was about a mother and a daughter, and I was trying to give a perspective from a mother's point of view, which, you know, you just don't see much, especially in family films anymore, and you do have a different perspective, and it was sad that there was no one that they knew of to replace me with, you know. So it was not that I felt I needed to be replaced, but, you know, if they had to, I wish they could have found someone else that had similar experiences to me.
Right. And what exact experiences did you have that made your connection to the film more important than what somebody else might be able to bring to it?
Well, I mean, it was inspired by my relationship with my daughter, for one, and that that conflict that we have that sort of surprised me because I didn't have that same kind of a relationship with my mother. So it came from deep within my heart, you know, and how much I love my daughter, but how crazy she makes me when she, you know, questions my every motive since she was 4 years old. So I was thinking, what's she like as a teenager? And, you know, on top of it, my love of fairy tales and trying to find one that would speak to a modern audience, you know, contemporary audience, to working moms and their daughters, and as well as the family, you know. I didn't shut out the dad or any other siblings. You know, I wanted to tell that, you know, from a mom's point of view, but also, you know, show a mother's love into this, but also give the daughter, you know, some respect in there too. So It just felt, yes, that it was very personal to me to make this movie.
Right.
It was a wonderful opportunity.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
It is.
You know, it brings up an issue that I wonder about, too. You know, a lot of fiction filmmaking is telling stories that the filmmaker, him or herself, may or may not have any actual connection to. So sometimes, you know, it's a personal story like what you just described, Brenda. Sometimes it's, you know, stories that are interesting stories, novels turned into movies, things like that. How hard is it for a filmmaker, as a man, to represent stories that are primarily women if the job of filmmaker often is to tell stories that you know nothing about personally? And so I guess the question is, you know, how hard is it, or how much does it get in the way if there are men making films about women and the female experience? How much do you need a female director, and vice versa? How hard would it be for a woman to make a story about the male experience?
I feel like that it doesn't matter, you know, depending on the story. I mean, for me, because it came from a very personal experience, yes, it was very close. But for those that are made of other from other people's original stories or whatever, it's you find something about it that you feel a passion for. You know, whether you're man or woman, you know, to make a film, you have to feel kind of passionate about it and have to put so much of yourself into it, whether it's how you use the camera, whether it's how you play the dialogue, whether how, you know, the acting direction, however, it just the look of the film, you know, it doesn't really matter gender-wise, but you will, you know, not only as individuals get a different point of view, no matter male or female, but on a male and female point of view, you're going to get a slightly different take on it as well. But that doesn't mean you have to be a man to direct a man-based movie or a woman to be direct a female-based movie. It just, I think each film is an individual, as is each director.
Mm-hmm. Paula, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that it comes down to only men can direct this and only women can direct this. I mean, most of the female films, the chick flicks that we see, were directed by a man. So I really don't think it comes down to that. But
I mean, wouldn't the argument about that be, and that's the problem, is that these chick flicks are directed by men and they don't get it?
I think it is one problem, but there are great films from a female protagonist point of view. I can't speak all those P's, but there are great films that were directed by men. I mean, I think it's if you're an artist, you're an artist. And I think what Brenda said about being passionate and finding something that you care about, mm-hmm. That's the key. What my concern is whether or not these stories if anyone will ever think about telling them at all. I mean, how many stories are there about the complicated relationship between a mother and a daughter? You know, it's pretty rare, mm-hmm. and especially a really big animated film. So I think the fact is that we do nobody does a film. Films are hard. Nobody does a film unless they really deeply care about something related to it. You know, there's some way that they got in there and cared. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that men will think to tell the same stories that women will, and I think that's what's missing.
What are some of the other kinds of stories that we might get if more women were at the helm in film?
You know, I think one thing that's really obvious, most stories that have a female protagonist end when she gets married. I mean, you never see anything beyond that, or they end when she has the baby. It's like, where's the rest of her life? You know, I mean, it's missing. There's this huge gap. The other thing, you don't get to see women age very often. And that's something that's really important. I remember, I'm trying to think of which film it was. Gosh, now I'm blanking out. Oh, it was Helen Mirren, the spy film that she did recently. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. Anyway, and they
have
you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I can't remember the name of it, though.
So many close-ups of Helen Mirren and her beautiful, you know, 60-some-year-old face. And to me, I mean, I could have watched that film 30 times just because you never get to see a real woman with life on her face.
Yeah.
You know?
They tend to be famous figures that have aged, like biopics and things like that.
Right. But not just a regular woman who has used her face for 65 years. You know? And usually, you know, if you do see that woman, she's done a lot of things to it to make it look more like it's 30.
Brenda, your thoughts on that? What might be different if there were more women at the helm?
Well, I agree with Paula. I feel like just the ideas that come to the forefront to make stories and films of, there would be different ones. You know, I think there would be a bigger variety and things that, yeah, I would say we would see more women of age and their stories, and but also more respectful images of women, you know, in the younger women's stories. You know, it's still so much based on, you know, sex appeal and, you know, and all of that. It's hard sometimes to separate that, you know, there are other things in life besides getting married and, you know, hitting the sack. So it's, I feel like you would get a little bit more variety.
Right. The movie that we were talking about is called The Debt, I think.
Thank you.
Thanks
Debt.
To our chat
exactly
room for on the website for bringing that up. I want to go on this topic of women running things. The Martha Lawson is the executive director of the Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film. We cited their study in the opening for this program. She wrote a piece on their website, If Women Ran Hollywood 2012, What Might That Look Like? And I want to read a couple of things that she mentions, because it's sort of that through the looking glass kind of view of one of the things: films made by and for a male audience would be considered a niche and frequently referred to as, quote, small films. Yes? Do you agree?
That just makes me laugh.
Here's another one. A major studio would entrust a woman who had previously directed one relatively low-budget romantic comedy to helm an expensive and high-profile tentpole reboot of a popular comic book franchise.
That's awesome.
No one in the Hollywood community would bat a fake eyelash.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, is this the way that it is? I mean, is there that double standard in terms of who gets put in charge of things in Hollywood? Brenda, I'll throw that to you.
Yes, sadly, I think there is. I don't know what else to say about it. It just sadly, you know, and I think it's done unconsciously a lot of times. I don't think it's the norm, and that's what we need to change is the norm.
But it comes down to changing the way we think. We were actually, after that screenwriting workshop, we were talking this Saturday about how it was me and four men at a table. And we were having lunch and we were talking and talking about, you know, what's, you know, the problem and how do we do it? How do we fix it? And, you know, it comes down to something so fundamental as we are more interested in what men have to say than women. Even women are more interested in what men have to say. I mean, as a general rule, you know, if we're all sitting around a table and a man says something, you know, everybody goes, whoa, what is it? What pearls of wisdom do you have to impart to us? And women are more, you know, we're sitting back and we're maybe hesitating as we speak. And that's not always the case. But I think that it's in the fabric of our culture and how we are dipped in it. And so I think that it comes down to so much more than just giving a woman an opportunity. It comes down to how we actually think, because it's something that happens split second. You know, it's like blink, Malcolm Gladwell. It really is. And it's so much more than the rules that we put in place. It's about how we think.
Right. Yeah, and that points to another item on this list from Martha Lawson. When a film featuring a male comic lead was successful, studio executives would scratch their heads in amazement and wonder, quote, are men funny? Right? And that's the Bridesmaids phenomenon, right?
Right.
I mean, I was taken aback with Bridesmaids, actually, because, you know, here's a movie that is all about women and made by women, and it's a female sense of humor. And it was a lot of the same jokes you'd see in a frat boy movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that scene when they're trying on wedding dresses, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't want to give it away. But for those of you who've seen it, I mean, it's a scene that is certainly not the kind of thing that a stereotypical representation of women would expect women to produce. And yet, there it is. Women are producing that. Women laugh about things that we wouldn't stereotypically ascribe to them laughing at in this movie.
I think that's right, but I think maybe we laugh for different reasons. And I don't know if I can really eloquently explain that, but even that scene, it's gross and it's funny and it's about bathroom humor to the, you know, to the nth degree. But it's almost funnier for women. At least I laughed at that scene because I remember like a scene, not that particular scene, but like having to use the restroom and everybody being there and, you know, you're all in the bathroom together. I think it's a different experience than if you had switched out men, it would have looked different. And it would have felt different. It would have been funny for different reasons.
Interesting. Brenda, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with her. It, you know, you do laugh for a different reason. Although I have heard that particular scene was sort of put in sort of later in the fact, and it wasn't originally in the movie, but it was one of the male producers who insisted that particular scene be put into the film.
Because it wasn't funny enough.
I find that interesting.
I heard that too.
Right. There's another thing on this list. Studio executives would name five male directors they had ever worked with in their entire careers as proof that men are just as likely to direct features as women. Paula's laughing.
You're bumming us out, Ruben.
We really are.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'll stop. I'll stop reading this list. Because apparently she's really hit on something here, right?
Yes.
There really is.
Definitely.
It's the truth. I mean, it is. And when you flip it like that, it does make it so real. You know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. This shouldn't be this way. It really shouldn't be this way.
Interesting.
I totally agree.
Right. What about in terms of the decision-making? I mean, is there any chance that the decision-makers at the top of this chain are going to become more, either more female generally, or at least more aware of these kinds of issues when they make their decisions? Brenda, maybe I'll throw that at you first. I mean, you mentioned one or two people that you've worked with who were really good about being inclusive to what you had to say and the work that you wanted to do. What about all the rest of those studio executives out there? Is that likely to change?
Well, that's a tough one because as long as we keep, not giving the young people a respectful view on women, then it's not going to change. But if we can find a way in to give better role models that they're going to see, if their parents, their mothers, you know, their sisters, their aunts, you know, can give them strong role models to look up to, male or female, then hopefully it can change. But it just seems to have been how it's been working for so long. It's really hard to crack that nut.
Right.
And I think it's just really complicated. I think because we are steeped in it, it is about who we see on the screen and what we see them doing. It's about who is getting the green light for the projects and the kinds of stories that they're telling. It's about who has their hands on the money, who's able to release it. It's about who goes out to the films and, you know, which films make money. I mean, I think it's so complicated. I always – we do a summer film academy with through Citizen Jane for young women and teaching them how to tell their stories through film. And one of the things that is so interesting to me is that, you know, when we tell them about these statistics, they don't get bummed out. They get excited. They're like, really? That means there's so much opportunity for me. You know, and so I really hold on to that. I hope that that's true because, you know, there's the whole saying that if you can't see it, you can't be it. And I think that's what's difficult. You know, somebody like Brenda who has achieved everything that she has and, you know, fearlessly, I mean, maybe you're not fearless, but you look fearless from this perspective,
oh, thank you.
You know, goes out and is honest and, you know, something like that. I mean, she makes a difference for thousands of young women who are afraid that they can't.
Interesting. Brenda, your thoughts on that? In terms of being a role model? I mean...
that's intimidating, I have to say. But... you know, I'm learning as I get more and more feedback on my website, as well as going out and speaking and lecturing. You know, just how packed these auditoriums are, you know, these student auditoriums with young women, but young men too. You know, and so that they really do look up to people that give them that role model, that they sort of are hungry for it. And I am incredibly humbled and very proud of the fact that I can be in that position for them and also be there, try to encourage them. But there aren't enough of us, and we need, you know, but slowly I think we will get bigger numbers. There are more than there used to be, you know, so... Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the challenges that women face as they move to the top of the film industry. Joining me in the studio are Paula Elias, co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival, and on the phone we have Brenda Chapman, who wrote and served as a director on the animated film Brave. For those of you in our audience, we have a few minutes left if you'd like to join our conversation, either with your questions or your thoughts. Feel free to give us a call. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Paula, earlier in the program, you sort of mentioned that you'd like to think you can spot the differences between a film that's produced by a woman or directed by a woman and one that is produced or directed by a man. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. What are some of the things that might tip you off that, okay, maybe this was a woman's film?
I've never been tested, so, you know, that's just a little fantasy I have in my head.
Next time we do this, we'll have a quiz. We'll,
exactly.
We'll pull clips.
But I think, you know, retrospectively, I think that Catherine Bigelow, The Hurt Locker, it's a film about war. So you could say, well, that's traditionally a man's field. But I think the way she did the film, I think the focus on the relationships, the focus on the internal struggle, I think that there was a – I think that as women, part of our survival depends on being really, really good at reading people and being really good at relationships. That's just, you know, from being very small, we get trained to be that way. And I don't think men have to do that as – have to be as good at it as women do. And so I think that just that skill alone informs how we create art.
Right. And are there themes that underlie the films that you've seen over the years as
– I don't think it's themes as much as it is just the kind of focus that we tend to have on character development and on relationships and on you know, we may tell a story that's a very male story, stereotypically male story, but we'll tell it in a way that maybe has more focus on relationships and why we do what we do.
Interesting. Brenda, that's your thoughts on, do you have thoughts on that, Brenda, in terms of, you know, what might be different about the films that women make versus what their male counterparts would do?
Well, I agree with Paula. I think a lot of it is about internal relationships and internal emotions based on each character and how that moves them forward into the story, the characters. But, you know, I know women who just love action films and, you know, would get into that. But I think that is the core of it, though. It's just interpersonal relationships are just – we go deeper in and to find those in the films. It's less less gag driven, at least in animation. I can only speak for animation, I find in animation that it's more about the gag than it is the heart so often with the films.
And there are definitely exceptions to every rule.
Of course, of course.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, are there other aspects of the films that are, you know, the ones that you've seen over the years for Citizen Jane, Paula, are there other aspects of those films that you think, wow, this is really unique that we don't see in a Hollywood context?
Yeah, they're just better. No. I'm kidding.
No, seriously. I mean
I think that, I think if I were to say that there's something that binds the films that we've seen for Citizen Jane together, I would say that really it does come down to a richness of character development. Actually what Brenda said, I thought she put it really eloquently about looking to see what will move your character forward and explaining that and showing that. And I think that that's different than, there's a bomb, exploded. Whoa, we don't know why. We don't know who was affected by that or what they thought about that or what they felt about it. I think a woman would be more prone to explaining what happened because of, you know, how people reacted to it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Are there any highlights from this year's festival that you want to share with us at this point?
So glad you asked.
Of course.
Don't Stop Believin', Every Man's Journey is a really rollicking good time. It's about the new lead singer for Journey, the band. He was a homeless teen from the Philippines. And so it's culturally very interesting. Who doesn't love a good Journey song?
And it's a documentary, right?
It's a documentary,
now,
yeah.
Now, earlier you sort of mentioned that it's more common for women to make documentary films than fiction films. Why is that?
I think it's, again, back to money. I think it's the film that generally you can make because, you know, you don't need wardrobe. You don't need to pay your actors generally. You don't need – there's just a lot of things that you don't need from a resource standpoint. And so it really is the film you can make by picking up a camera and just having a passion and wanting to tell the story. Ramona Diaz had amazing access to this story, and so it really is the behind the scenes of this incredible story. And that's our opening night film at Missouri Theater, and so I really encourage people to come out for that. We do have an end of the world theme this year. It's called The End is Just the Beginning is our theme, and it's really based on the idea that for women in film, the end would be good. We'd like a new world where this is concerned. So we have a lot of fun things going on about that. Our closing night film is called Wonder Women, the untold story of the American superheroine. That speaks to all the superhero films that we see every summer, and where's the Wonder Woman film? Is that ridiculous
exactly.
When you think about it? It's like, where is she?
Right.
So, I mean, it's a great film, and we've got a costume contest where we encourage people to dress up as their own superhero. So, Ruben, you could go as Super Ruben.
Or Wonder Woman, right?
Yes, who knows? Yeah, we encourage them.
Brenda, I wanted to ask you a little bit before we run out of time here. What recommendations do you have in terms of this situation and getting more women into film? I mean, do you have any ideas about what people can do either within or without, or individual filmmakers or things that might help?
Well, as I said earlier, to me, the biggest thing right now is for those of us who are working in the industry to either step out, come out of hiding, and mentor as best we can, do speaking workshops and all of that to you know, just encourage them. But also just, you know, I'm just really encouraged by the number of women that are coming into the industry through the schools that I have seen. There just are a lot more than there used to be. All I can do is just say keep plugging along. I don't have the answers. I have my opinions, and I'm trying to work on them. But I'm just one small person in the bigger scheme of things.
I mean, quickly, do you have any particular advice for a young female filmmaker going out into the world at this point? We have quite a few of them in our area.
Be true to your passion. Look for it and work with that, and let that be your driving force, because that's what makes a great film, no matter what sex you are. But don't be talked out of it because it doesn't fit into somebody else's bag of tricks.
Mm-hmm. Paula, your thoughts on that in terms of what you would say to young filmmakers these days that are just starting out?
I don't know if I have any real advice for young filmmakers other than get involved with Citizen Jane and we'll support you as much as we can. But really, to the general public, just to all of us, the one piece of advice that I would say is if this is something that you notice is unfair and you really want your world to be more equitable and richer, figure out who's directed the film and watch the credits and go see films that are made by women. Support them. I mean, there's the First Weekenders Club and on both coasts, I think, that they go out and, you know, they send emails and texts and say, you know, it's a film directed by a woman is opening this weekend. Go out and make your dollars count. And it does matter. I mean, even though we're not a First Weekend kind of a community here in Columbia, it does matter. They look at the box office. And so if there's a film that intrigues you and it's made by a woman, get off your couch and go out and pay the, whatever it is, $8 and go see it.
That's interesting, sort of a grassroots activism there to support that.
Yeah.
Interesting. We have about a minute left. Any final thoughts about this topic that you'd like to offer up? Brenda, I'll give you a chance first.
I know it's going to get better. I'm very optimistic, but it, you know, I also know it could be a slow growth. But this year alone has shown that that women do have a voice in the film industry. So let's just try to keep that going.
Okay, Paula, just really quickly, if people want to attend the festival, what do they need to do?
Go to Citizen Jane Film. CitizenJaneFilm.org and buy a pass, buy some tickets. Come enjoy it. Enjoy the festival. It's going to be really fun.
Okay, you'll also find a link to that on our program's website here. That's all the time we have for today's Intersection. I'd like to thank our guests, Paula Elias, co-director of the Citizen Jane Film Festival, and on the phone we had Brenda Chapman, who wrote and served as a director on the animated film Brave. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of our program, submit your questions and comments, and participate in an online chat with others in the audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar and J.C. Lee. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Danny Madison. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Ruben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.